Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is a post-game edition. There we go. That's a little better. Post-game edition of the Utopia Football Podcast following a 24-20 Texans win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take it any way we can get it, I suppose. The Texans are 3-1 on the season, 2-0 in the AFC South, and this one was probably way more of a struggle than it needed to be, way more of a struggle than maybe the most Texan fans anticipated. The line on this game opened at 4.5 earlier in the week prior to Jacksonville getting blown out by Buffalo. And then that blowout by Buffalo predictably sent a ton of money onto the Texan side of things. And the line got all the way up to 7. I don't know where it closed at. I saw some people saying at 5.5, 6, wherever the case may be. Either way, the last play of the game that looked like it might have been a safety that would have made it 26-20 and would have pushed it over the total for the total point score to 44.5. That was kind of a fun moment at the end of that game, sitting in the press box with people who may or may not have had a vested interest in things like that. Turned out it wasn't a safety. 24-20, the final score of the game. So we'll break it all down for you here in nice, quick-hitting four winners, four losers fashion, and start to look ahead at this week, at what some of the storylines are going to be with the Houston Texans. To me, I think the biggest storyline, before we get into specific people, winners and losers, is that the reason this game was as close as it was the same reason why the other two wins were so close and why the Minnesota game was such a blowout. The Texans continue to make a lot of mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot. And in the first week of the season against the Colts, it was giving up big plays. They fortunately have not done that to the same extent they did against Anthony Richardson, and also giving up a blocked punt in that game. But the issue the last 3 weeks has been penalties. 12 penalties against the Bears, 11 penalties last week against the Vikings. And then after being told that it was addressed and it's going to be cleaner this week, it was worse. It was 12 penalties again today. And some of them have just stupid stuff. I'm trying to read D'Amico Ryans in these post-game press conferences and in the speeches to the team in the locker room and just trying to really gauge. I know this is important to him, obviously. He's not a dummy. He knows that they've got to get these penalties fixed. I'm just trying to read into body language and what he's saying to know that, does he think it's really important, or is he as angry about it as the rest of us are right now? Because, man, we'll get to Laremy Tunsil. Don't worry. We're doing four winners and four losers. But that, to me, the big story of this game is that, A, yes, they're 3-1, which I would have signed up for at the beginning of the year. If you had blindly told me, like, don't look at the box score, don't look at who they beat, just these four opponents, at Indy, home for Chicago, at Minnesota, home for Jacksonville, you're going to be 3-1 after the first four games. I would have signed up for it, especially if I knew that you were going to be 2-0 in the division. If I knew that one of those two losses would be to Chicago or Minnesota, the two games that are two of the four games, or five if you count Dallas, that are least likely to bite you in the butt when it comes to tiebreakers, because those are NFC teams. They're not in your conference. They're not in your division. You got to go way down the tiebreaker list to where NFC games start affecting you. So I would have signed up for that. Now, if I remove my hand off the box score and I see exactly how they arrived at 3-1, then I would be, like I feel today, somewhat frustrated that this team plays so sloppy, that they commit so many penalties, that so many of the penalties are of the careless variety, that they're continuing to win football games is all well and good. But look, there are so many teams on the schedule the rest of the way for the Houston Texans that if this is the brand of football they're playing, if this is who they are, and honestly, four games in, I mean, at what point does this become, this is who the Texans are, not, oh, they've got this level they can really reach. Boy, this is a B-minus game for them. If they can really reach their ceiling, maybe they're a team that's inconsistent and sloppy and has to worry or has to rely on C.J. Stroud to put a cape on every time they want to go get a close win. Because this is what the team does. So, I mean, really over the majority of the body of work of D'Amico Ryan's time here, they do one of two things most of the time. they either let teams that are inferior to them or maybe at the same level hang around, oftentimes winning. I will give them credit for that. DeMeco's record now in one score games is a pretty sterling 10-3, or they get blown out by good teams because the inconsistent things that they're just not taking to heart and fixing come back to bite you when you play, say, Minnesota, who's thus far this season a very, very good football team. They won again today. If they play the way they did today against the Buffalo Bills, the Bills will blow the doors off them next Sunday. I have zero doubt about that. You commit 12 penalties against the Bills, it is going to be an angry, angry city of Houston following that game, especially if it's false starts and stupid holds and unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. When you commit 11 penalties for 80-something yards, there's really no spin on it. There's really no, well, that's just effort or this. No, there's plenty of sloppy in there, man, or 12 penalties, whatever it was today. I've lost track. They've committed 35 penalties in 3 weeks. Credit Laremy Tunsil, no false starts, but he had two holding penalties. So we'll get to all that. So my overall mood after this game is generally good because they won. Look, we're a year removed. We're 2 years removed from them being one of the worst teams in football. We're a year removed from not knowing what this whole thing was going to look like and how quickly it would turn. Well, it turned pretty quickly, ultimately. And the good news is they didn't let last week beat them necessarily. The only time DeMeco Ryans has lost two games in a row in his head coaching tenure was the first two games of his career against the Ravens and the Colts last year. Other than that, they bounce back pretty well from losses, the Texans do. Now, they're going to get it together next week, and we got all week to talk about the Bills, but I am early on not optimistic. The Bills, a 2.5-point favorite in that game. This will be the first time all season the Texans have been an underdog in a game, which unto itself is a bit of an accomplishment, I think. They've been favorites in the first four games. This is not an accomplishment. They are 0-4 against the spread so far. So if you're a Texan fan who's been backing the Texans blindly because you're a Texan fan thinking they're covering the spread, depending on where you got some of these games in the spread, they're 0-4 right now. There may be one that you caught a different number at the beginning of the week than at the end of the week, whatever the case may be. But as far as the lines at kickoff, they are 0-4 against the spread so far. All right, before we get into four winners and losers, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. I always appreciate that. And if you want to hit me with an email, now's the best time to start doing it. This is when I start looking at the email bag once the game is over for the week. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Big thank you to listeners of the podcast who come by the pregame show and tell me how much they enjoy the podcast. My favorite one today was my buddy Toy, who stopped by, whose folks live in my building where Amy and I live. And you guys know, like when I get to about 30 or 35 minutes, I never know if I've been talking too much for you guys. I'm someone who likes podcasts to skew a little on the shorter side rather than the longer side, make it like, you know, fits in a commute or whatever, or workout. But Toy, thank you for saying you like it if I just kept going and going and going. Now, some of you are like, Toy, shut the fuck up, man. Let's let him give us what we want and then get the hell out of here. Here's the thing. If you feel that way, you can always hit the pause button, the stop button. I'm not going to tell you to hit the unsubscribe button, because I don't do that. I don't tell my customers to leave the building. I don't do that. Don't call you dumb. Don't say, hey, well, you know what? If you don't like it, you've got 8 million other podcasts you can listen to, because that is very true. But thank you guys for stopping by and saying hello, stopping by the pregame. Beautiful day out there today. What a great day to tailgate. Just get in the stadium earlier, people, okay? I said this on the postgame show, and I got kind of 50-50 response to it. I don't understand the people that aren't in their seats at or around kickoff. I don't get y'all that are walking in at like 12:45. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not telling you how to fan. I don't understand you is all I'm saying. Like if I'm spending hundreds of dollars on tickets, the last thing I want to do is miss 25% of the game, you know? So anyways, that's just my two cents. Let's get to four winners and four losers, shall we? Let's start off with the winners. Start off with the good news. Number one, Nico Collins. Nico Collins is making a case for best receiver in football and making an early case for offensive player of the year. Not an exaggeration. Going into this game on the odds board on Tuesday that come out, they have new odds that come out every week for the various awards. Nico Collins was fifth on the board for offensive player of the year. You know, he's behind Justin Jefferson and a couple other non-quarterbacks. Offensive player of the year is essentially the most valuable non-quarterback in football. if Nico Collins is not at least top three, at worst top three, I should say, this week on that odds board, then something's wrong. He's amazing. He's compiled the most yards through four games in a season of any wide receiver in Texans history. Need I remind you that Andre Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins both played multiple seasons for the Texans. Andre Johnson over a decade, DeAndre Hopkins, seven seasons, should have been longer. The most prolific wide receiver through four games is Nico Collins in 2024. That contract looks incredible. And when this offense was getting bogged down in the early part of the second half, you know what they weren't doing? Targeting Nico Collins. The first two drives where they went three and out, they targeted three Diggs and a Schultz on those two three and outs. They started mixing Nico back into the offense and things started clicking again. Now, penalties torpedoed a lot of things on those drives until the final drive of the game where they were able to play a clean drive, go down and get a touchdown. But when they're feeding Nico Collins, things are generally good. And when CJ Stroud is targeting Nico Collins, historically, his passer rating is through the roof. And they had another play this time around this game where CJ's rolling to his right, rolling. You think he's going to run out of bounds and he zips it back across his body. Most of the time you'd say, no, don't. Oh, okay. There's Nico. Never mind. Good job, CJ. Good job, Nico. Nico Collins is a delight, and I love the fact that they've got him locked up for three more years after this with CJ Stroud. It's just they are a lethal duo, maybe the best duo in football, maybe the one that most teams would pick as their duo. You know what I mean? Like Justin Jefferson in Minnesota, would they trade Sam Darnold and Justin Jefferson for CJ Stroud and Nico Collins? I know they just beat the Texans 34-7 last week, but don't tell me they wouldn't do it. They would. I promise you they would. Darnold's got an expiration date, man. He's going to be sour milk at some point during the season here. I promise you. So winner number one, Nico Collins. Let's mix CJ Stroud in as winner number two. I don't know where this team would be without CJ Stroud. I don't know where they would have been today without CJ Stroud. He threw for well over 300 yards. I got to go back and watch and see how many of the plays they ran today were actually executed. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Where they went and got yards, if the way that they got them was how the play was designed. You know what I mean? Like how much of the stuff they did was off script, CJ improvising, CJ getting flushed out of the pocket. He is remarkable. And my confidence level when he took over the football with 2:54 to go, having to go 69 yards for a touchdown was very, very high. I think he's built for those types of situations. Now, I wish there weren't the lulls in offense. I don't know that that's entirely on CJ. But that does happen. I mean, rare is the Texans game where they are just pedal to the metal, putting it on teams for 60 minutes. They scored 24 points today. I don't want to act like they dropped a 40 burger on somebody. They scored 24 points. They did nothing in the second half up until that final drive. But the bottom line is they did enough to win the football game, and CJ Stroud is remarkable. So he is winner number two. Winner number three was our guest on the postgame show, Daria Gumbawale, who scored the game-winning touchdown, who clearly when it came down to nut-cutting time at the end of the game on this last drive, there was no other running back they wanted in other than Daria Gumbawale. Not Cam Akers, not J.J. Taylor, not British Brooks, all guys who had gotten snaps earlier in the game. I don't know that Daria had gotten a carry before the last drive where they got down inside the 10-yard line, and then they handed the ball off to him on first and goal and second and goal. I think for the most part, to make the Jags use their timeouts, which I thought was really cagey and smart by D'Amico Ryans. I don't like how D'Amico handles the end of halves. I think he handles it way too conservatively, at least he has this year. I know they came away with a field goal on the final drive of the first half. I thought they got way too cute with the clock and letting the clock run down. When you finish a half, second and goal at the 5-yard line with a timeout in your back pocket, and you have to kick a field goal, something went wrong in your game management. Conversely, I thought the game management at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, was fantastic. They had first and goal. They might have run CJ and then Dari. I don't remember, but they ran the ball a couple of times down inside, deep in Jacksonville territory. And they made the Jags use their last two timeouts with about a minute to go in regulation. I thought that was great, you know, and I think you're thinking to yourself, well, We'll give CJ a chance on third and goal. The worst case scenario is we're kicking a field goal and the Jags have no timeouts left to work their way down the field. I thought it was really key to empty the Jags of their timeouts with under a minute to go, especially then if you score a touchdown like they did, then they had no chance. Once you scored a touchdown and you made them empty their bag and they got the ball back with 18 seconds left, they were done. And then I love the kickoff by Kaimi, landed it in the landing zone, so they had to run it back. You can't fair catch it. That was great. You know, so by the time the Jags were able to walk up to the line of scrimmage, they had 12 seconds left to go the length of the field and no timeout. So I thought the end of regulation management by D'Amico Ryans was great. Dario Gamuwale, a big part of that. The winning touchdown, had a big 3rd-and-18 conversion earlier in the game. He is one of those guys. I compared him up in the booth, up in the press box today. Not the booth, but the press box with the guys. I was sitting with all the 6'10 guys. I forget who I said this to. But Dari is one of those guys. Like, Dari's in his 8th year. Like, he's been around the NFL for a long time. And he's going to be around the NFL for at least a few more years because he does all these little things that you can do, you know, to stay on a team. Plays special teams. Really reliable, doesn't turn the ball over. If you need a guy to come in for a spell and carry the ball 5 or 6 times, man, you can count on Dari to go get you, you know, 4 or 5 yards of carry for a little bit. Catches the ball out of the backfield, as we saw in the game-winning play. My comp to him, I said, he's a little like Shane Battier to me. You know what I mean? Like, Shane Battier just did all these little things that don't show up in the box score, but he hung around forever. And it's probably a little bit of a clunky comparison, but it's one of those things like there was never a point in training camp where I felt like Dario Gumbawale is getting cut from the team because he kicks, by God. He's a freaking place kicker when you need him to do it. So just a jack of all trades. And he is the third winner on this game. Last one I'm going to give it to, Eric Murray. Had a couple big plays in this game. Yes, that Eric Murray, the one that got $7 million a year from Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien or whatever it was. He had a big sack. The only sack of the game today came on a third down with Eric Murray coming off the corner, a corner blitz, safety blitz, whatever you want to call it. And that got the Texans off the field. He had a great pass breakup on third down in the fourth quarter to get the Texans the ball back. So good for Eric Murray, another vet who's kind of hung around a while, much longer than I thought. If you had told me Eric Murray, when he got signed by Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, would be lasting through all these head coaches and GMs and whatnot, I would have said, you're crazy. But he's still here. And for what they need him to do, he does a great job. He, too, a special teams guy like Dari as well. So those are my four winners, Nico, CJ, Dari, and Eric Murray. Four losers, Steven Sims. You may need to hand in your playbook. When your only job is to return punts and kicks or fair catch them, you have to catch them. You can't muff a punt and hand a touchdown over to an inferior team. That muffed punt and touchdown is why this game was so close all afternoon. The Texans went out and got a 3-and-out on the first possession of the game defensively. So you seize that early momentum. Now you basically nullified the opening possession because the Jags go 3-and-out. You're getting the ball to start the second half a little later in the game. Couldn't have worked out any better. Then Steven Sims, for some reason, feels like he's got to catch the ball at the 10-yard line while sliding. Like, what are you doing, dude? What are you doing? And so I think that's enough. Like, to me, unless you're doing other stuff, that's enough to me to go, okay, just leave Robert Woods back there. I know he's at least going to catch the ball. Then Steven Sims comes back in the game later and catches the ball. Doesn't even return it, just like he kind of catches it while he's going out of bounds, which is fine. But then he must have jawed at somebody or said something. Gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. You're Steven Sims. You know how many good returns you need to have to make up for what you did today, Steven Sims? Not enough to where there's enough season left for it. You were awful today. You are number one loser today, Steven Sims, on this list. Number two, Bobby Slowick wanting to continue to just pound the rock on first down, especially when you've got some momentum going with the passing game. There are so many snaps that Bobby Slowick just lights on fire throughout a game. And times where he starts to get a little fancy. He had some player combos out there today that just made no sense, where he's got Nico and Steph Diggs on the sideline. And he's got British Brooks and John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson out there. Like, what are we doing? Like, are we preparing for game 2 of the preseason next year by putting these guys in crucial situations? I'm not saying the guys shouldn't play, but a second half of a game where you're trailing, what are we doing? So I just think Slovic's had a very up and down year. They didn't run the football well again today. That's on him. So, and there were penalties again today. Again, you know, this all rolls up. You know, it's the especially the penalties on the offensive line, man. If I'm Chris Strausser, I'm stressed out about this, the O-line coach. And I'm stressed out if I'm Bobby Slowick. D'Amico's got enough on his plate that he's stressed about the team as a whole. But again, D'Amico's making promises in press conferences that we've addressed this and this and that. And then you go out and have more penalties this week than you had last week. But I'm going to put it under Slowick. The Bobby Slowick as a head coach candidate thing is interesting. I would be curious to know what that scorecard looks like right now, because it's not been a great offensive season for the Texans so far, at least not in terms of expectations that they had. And right now, if I'm an owner of an NFL team that thinks I'm going to be looking at a head coach and I'm looking at Slowick right now, I'd be like, okay, where's the run game? And can you bring CJ Stroud with you? If you can't bring CJ Stroud with you, I've got no use for you. I like Slowick. I think he's going to be fine, but it's been a very, very inconsistent up and down first four games. And there's been too many lulls like the one they had at the beginning of the second half today. You know, the fact that they went six quarters, the second half of the Bears game and the entirety of the Vikings game scoring 10 points is inexcusable on a team with CJ Stroud and Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. That's unacceptable. Speaking of unacceptable, Laremy Tunsil, two holding penalties. I don't know what to do anymore. I don't know what to do with Laremy anymore. Two holding penalties by Laremy Tunsil. No false starts. Yay. The illegal formation thing seemed to get rectified today. But Laremy Tunsil, two holding penalties, and they were in the second half, and there's no good time for that. So, Laremy, you're on the list again. And then the pass rush, just underwhelming today. I'm not going to hit them too hard because they've been good all season long. One of my big keys to this game was heating up Trevor Lawrence. And they didn't really do that. Trevor was able to escape a few times. They only sacked him once. It was on some trickery with Murray coming off the corner on a blitz. They really only got their hands on him a few times. Will Anderson and Daniil Hunter mostly, but also obviously Derek Barnett and others. And then one big pressure I remember them getting early was Azeez Al-Shaair and Henry Toa coming up the middle. So I don't know what the solution is for that. I'm very anxious to see how they handle Josh Allen next week, because he is next level mobile. You know, Trevor Lawrence is a good athlete. Josh Allen is a great quarterback. So we'll see what happens. But whoops, I forgot to flip it over to losers. Yeah, so there you go. Four losers. Fifth loser, me, for not changing the graphic on the YouTube. So again, the winners, Nico, CJ, Dario Gumawale, Eric Murray. Losers, Steven Sims, Bobby Slowick, Laremy Tunsil, and then the pass rush. Meager pass rush today by the Houston Texans. All right. Again, a reminder, houmailbag@gmail.com is where you can find me, is where you can email me. I'll do the mailbag episode Tuesday, as I always do this week. So be sure to send one in. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. Appreciate you guys doing that. As I end things here, if you're watching on YouTube, I am in the Hyundai Texans radio studio. Everybody's gone. Nobody's in the stadium anymore. Just me. Make a run around, you know, just go see what's happening out here. And I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go to my car and get out of here. I'm starving. I want to go home and eat. So that's it. I'll see you all tomorrow. If you're listening to this tonight, I don't know when this drops, but every day, 6 a.m., Monday through Friday, myself and Seth Payne. So if you give us a listen there, we always appreciate that. We'll be all over Texans football all week long. And Astros playoff baseball starts on Tuesday as well. Exciting times. So until then, thank you for listening. Thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer. See y'all later this week. Texans are 3-1. Thumbs up on that. Go Texans. Have a great week, everybody.